Good to be with you today. Good to have those of you who are visiting. We're glad to have you with us today. Hope you can come back and be with us again. Last week, we started a series on people that Jesus befriends. And there's different types of people that Jesus befriends. Last week, we talked about those that others might tend to look down upon. We looked in particular at those who were tax collectors, Levi in particular, who was also Matthew. And Jesus was criticized for being with those who many others decided were not worthy to be considered or to befriend. Today we want to talk about those who are discouraged. And, you know, there's certainly a lot of situations where Jesus came in contact with people who were discouraged at different times. And we'll be looking at Luke chapter 5 in just a moment. When I was growing up, one of the things that my dad liked to do with us was to take us fishing. And I kind of grew up with a warped sense of what fishing was, because he had a friend who had a fish hatchery. You know, they raised fish in the lakes. And so I thought that's what fishing was like. And so you, by the time you threw a hook out into the water, you've got a fish. And so it kind of ruined me for that when I realized that there's, you know, other times that it doesn't work that way. You know, I always like putting the little red and white bobbers on the fishing line. You saw that bobber would go under immediately when we were fishing. And, you know, in the first century, fishing wasn't like it is for us, for most people. You know, we consider it something that's relaxing. We want to go pull up it. You know, unfold a chair and fish by the lake, and it's a relaxing thing for most people. But being a fisherman in the first century, it was a life that required very hard labor. And the first century fishermen at the Sea of Galilee, they'd cast out their boats into the sea. They'd wait on the edge of that boat and cast the large nets into the water. And for hours and hours, a fisherman would continue to cast nets into the water. And of course, it was not something that was a one-man job. It was something that required a lot of labor. And with a catch of fish, it would require several men to bring that in. And one thing that most people don't like about fish, well, I didn't like, is the prospect of catching nothing. You know, that's something that, Ethan, I think he can fish for hours and not catch anything and be disappointed, but he's still kind of happy that he went fishing. And if I don't catch something, I think it was a total waste of time. And so coming home empty-handed can be a great disappointment. And what's worse is when you look around and you see others that may be catching something close to you, so you keep moving over to where they are, hoping that you'll catch something, but to no avail. But in the first century, a fisherman that wasn't catching anything, it was not only a disappointment, but it was a loss of livelihood. It was a loss of a paycheck. And so, you know, working as a fisherman is what, you know, put money in their pockets, food on the table. And so what we see in the account that we're going to look at, it's a disappointing day for Simon Peter and his men. They've worked all night long. They've cast their nets into the sea. They've caught nothing. They're exhausted after all this hard work, and they're ready to call it quits. And they bring their boats into the shore and they begin washing their nets. And so this is something that can seem pretty discouraging and pretty futile. And in Luke chapter 5, starting in verse 1, it says that Jesus saw two boats by the lake. The fishermen had gone out, and they were washing their nets, getting to one of the boats, which was Simon. He asked him to put a little out from the land, and he sat down and taught people from the boat. And when he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, put out into the deep and let your nets down for a catch. And Simon answered, Master, we have toiled all night and took nothing, but at your word I will let down the nets. And probably most everybody here knows how this story turned out. But what we have here is Jesus has crowds around him, and they're pressing him to the point that he is backed up to the waters of the sea, and Jesus sees these boats near him. He gets into one of the boats and asks Simon to push out a little from the land. And so he's got a good place there that he can teach from. And Peter, you know, willingly helped Jesus out here to get away from the throngs of people and the crowds. And so Peter's there listening to the teachings of Jesus. But when Jesus finishes speaking, he tells Simon Peter to put the boat out into the deep water and let down the nets for a catch. And you can hear the words of, you know, despair or discouragement in that Peter is saying, you know, we've been doing this all day. And you know, we've talked about this story before, or others of you have talked about this. This, you know, Jesus telling Peter to do this, this is not going to be something that's easy to do. You know, after all the nets have been brought in and dried and put up, you know, this is something that's going to be kind of laborious, and it probably seems very futile to Peter to do this. And so you can hear those words that Peter's saying. They're exhausted. It's time to go rest. It's time to maybe try again another day. They've done this all night and they've caught nothing. So Peter here is kind of implying that this one time is not really going to change anything. It's not going to be profitable. And, you know, is Jesus known for his fishing prowess? You know, is this something that Jesus is well known for, that he's the master fisherman? Well, he's known to be a carpenter. And so, you know, Peter might be thinking this carpenter thinks that we're going to go out into the deep and we're going to catch some fish and come back in. But, you know, it could be that we're wasting our time. And I imagine that a lot of people have had days like this where they feel very discouraged. I'm sure that everybody has felt that way. You know, you would have to be very unusual not to have felt that way. And, you know, today when so many people are very vocal about their feelings and they post on Instagram and Facebook and whatever, you know, every detail of their life, what they had for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and they'll tell you when they're discouraged many times. And just recently, I saw a post that was kind of disturbing from a young man that had been at camp with us, and he had posted something, you know, some days that I just feel like giving up. And of course, that's discouraging, and it's alarming when you hear a young person, you know, say that, because, you know, those of us that are old think, you know, we'd love to be young again. But to hear a young person that's in the prime of their life with so much to look forward to be discouraged like that. Of course, a lot of people came to his aid and wanted to encourage him and to tell him that, you know, whatever's going on, to not give up. But we've all had days like that, and sometimes people don't express them. They just keep it to themselves, where you look at life and you just see emptiness because of, you know, something may be happening. There's something that has been a big discouragement to you or a big hardship to you. And here Peter is saying, you know, he's thinking, you know, we're wasting our time, but yet he's going to do what Jesus said to do. Things don't always go the way that we hope that they will. In Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 14, you know, it's one of the ironic things about Ecclesiastes, you know, with Solomon is the writer of that. You think about all the things that Solomon had. You think about all the resources that he had available to him, being the wisest man that ever lived, plus being so incredibly wealthy and having everything we would think that he needed. But yet he looks at what he has and says, vanity of vanities, all is vanity, all is vanity and grasping for the wind. I've seen all the works that are done under the sun. It's all vanity. And that's always been interesting to me to look at that book from, you know, trying to imagine the perspective of Solomon, who had what he had, but to realize it was all vanity. And many times people have so much discouragement. We see people that are rich and famous, you know, their lives come crashing down and they, you know, turn to drugs and alcohol, or worse, they commit suicide, and we wonder, you know, how can somebody that seems to have it all do such a thing? The point is that people become discouraged for different reasons. You know, we're in the rat race, or you can call it the dog chasing his tail. We feel like we're going around in circles and not getting anywhere. And as soon as you make a little bit of money, something goes wrong with the car. And you try to upgrade your possessions, and it's more headaches and more things break, and you become dismayed and wonder, you know, what's the point? Well, you know, Peter says with great resignation, you know, it's not going to do any good here to do what you're saying, but I'm going to do what you said. I don't think Peter had any expectations here that this was going to work out favorably. I'm going to do this just because you said so, Jesus. And when I pull these nets back up, I'm going to tell you I told you so. But the great point here is that things change with Jesus. Things change with Christ. And so, you know, this final time, Peter and his men, they let down the nets. And they probably are feeling a pull on those nets like they have never felt before. The pull on the nets is so great that the nets are beginning to tear. And they signal for another boat to come help them. It's so much that they can't even handle it themselves. Help us to get these nets up with all these fish. And with the extra men, they begin to pull up the nets, but there's so many fish in the nets. The nets are about to break, and they fill both boats. And so you can see this great success that they had because they did what Jesus said to do. What's happened here is the unimaginable has taken place. You know, Peter and his crew, they've worked hard. They fished all night. They didn't catch one fish. And Jesus tells them in the middle of the day, you know, go out and, you know, to do this. And they immediately caught two boatloads of fish. They probably had never seen this many fish at once to fill two boats to the point that the boats start to sink. It's so heavy. And so I think the point for us is obvious here is that we have to trust Christ. And that Jesus is with us on this journey. When people like this young man I was telling you about get discouraged, you know, we feel like we are all alone. And it's very easy to become discouraged when we feel that way, when we feel lonely. And it certainly would be useful for us to go back to the Word of God as we see here, and we see how God answers prayers. We see how God interacts in the lives of those that trust Him. And it'd be useful for us, you know, to look back in our lives when we see how God has answered our prayers for our spiritual and physical needs. One thing that I think of quite often, because people in my work, when I'm introduced to new people, they ask me, well, how long have you been with Konica Minolta? And usually we try to get some trust in our knowledge of printing. So I'll talk about the 18 years experience that I had at the largest commercial printer in Alabama that no longer exists, because they went under after they laid me off. But you know, so at that time when that happened, all of you remember that. All of you that were here remember I was laid off, and there were several months before I got a new job, and then a few months after that I got the good job that they really like. You think about how discouraging that is to be laid off. But I always, you know, tell people that it turned, you know, I thought my life was over when that happened. But, you know, because you work somewhere for that long, you're not really used to interviewing and looking for jobs. But it all turned out well. You know, God blessed me in finding something else that I like much better. And at the time, that's certainly not the way that I felt, you know, the day that I was brought into the room with 20 other people and given my walking papers. Oh, good, this is going to turn out great. That's not what I was thinking. Brendan, at that age, when I went to work in the morning, he did it from the time that he was, you know, just little. He says, bye, Dad, don't get fired. And so, you know, and he said that for years and years. And then I had to come home one day and said, well, you know, it happened. But you become discouraged about those things. And we need to look at the way God has helped us and answered our prayers for our physical and spiritual needs. And those that have received bad news at different times, whether it be health reasons or other things, that And sometimes doctors shake their heads, unable to explain how a recovery took place. And so lives that suffer from discouragement and disappointment and futility can be something that's purposeful and something that's energized with hope when you have Jesus Christ. So here again, Peter, he expresses that, you know, we've been doing this, maybe a waste of time, so why is it going to be different? Well, it's going to be different this time because Jesus is involved in it this time. Matthew chapter 19, verse 26 says that all things are possible with God. So Simon Peter sees what's happening. He falls at the feet of Jesus, and those who are with him, they're astounded. They're amazed at the catch of fish that they took. And it's just something that's really hard for us to visualize, that, you know, these are some fishermen that had caught what they had been just a few hours earlier. It had been totally impossible for them to do. They're in awe because of the quantity of fish that came up in these nets and had not ever seen anything like that. So Peter, when he's on his knees, he says, "Go away from me because I'm a sinful man, Lord." Peter now sees his inferiority and recognizes that who he is in the presence of. But Jesus responds to him, "Not to fear, because I've got a job for you. You're catching fish here, but you're going to be fishers of men in the future." So they bring the boats back to the land, and Peter and his men, they leave everything to follow Jesus. So you can certainly see why this great event, you know, prompted Peter to have that respect and awe for the Lord, and to take up and leave his job and follow Jesus. And Peter certainly is one who has some shortcomings, and we'll look at some of those as we go through this lesson. Peter is one that needs to keep trying again and again. And so in Matthew chapter 14, starting in verse 22, says, "Immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side while he sent the multitudes away. And when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. Now when evening came, he was alone, but the boat was now in the middle of the sea, tossed by waves, for the wind was contrary." So here the disciples are in the boat on the same body of water. They're trying to row against the wind to reach shore. And let's look at what happens. Verse 25, "And now in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went to them walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, 'It is a ghost.' And they cried out for fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, 'Be of good cheer, it is I, do not be afraid.' And Peter answered him and said, 'Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water.' So he said, 'Come.' And when Peter had come down out of the boat, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw that the wind was boisterous, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, saying, 'Lord, save me.' And immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and caught him and said to him, 'O you of little faith, why did you doubt?' And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased." So when the disciples see Jesus, at first they are afraid because they think they're seeing a ghost, which you can understand why when they see Jesus walking on the water. And Jesus, you know, responds to Jesus tells Peter, don't fear, because it's me. And Peter said, "Well, if it's you, you know, command me to come out and let me walk with you." And so when Peter walks on the water toward Jesus, Peter looks around, sees the wind. He became afraid and began to sink. Jesus reaches out his hand and saves him from sinking and declares to Peter, "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" Of course, this is another one of those, you know, pinnacle moments that we see in the life of Peter that we're very familiar with. And so, what does Jesus do? Well, he sends Peter home and says, "You are a failure, and I don't want anything to do with you anymore." No, it doesn't say that. He's telling Peter to try again. You need to have more faith, Peter. It says when they got into the boat, the wind ceased. They're still together. On another occasion, in Mark chapter 8, verse 31, Jesus explains to his disciples that he must suffer many things, be rejected, killed, and rise again 3 days later. And Peter takes Jesus aside and begins to rebuke him. But these things aren't going to happen to you. He began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and after 3 days rise again. He spoke this word openly. Then Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But when he had turned around and looked at his disciples, he rebuked Peter, saying, "Get behind me, Satan, for you are not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men." Can you imagine having that said to you? He didn't call me Peter, he called me Satan. You don't have in mind the things of God, but the things of men. You know, that's very biting. But Peter doesn't go away, and Jesus doesn't reject Peter and tell, "I'm not going to have anything else to do with you." Peter's going to try again. On another occasion, in Mark chapter 14, we see that Jesus predicts that Peter will deny him three times before the rooster crows twice. And Peter famously declares that even if he must die with Jesus, he will never disown him. Peter said to him, "Even if all are made to stumble, yet I will not be." Jesus said to him, "Assuredly, I say to you today, even this night before the rooster crows twice, you will deny me three times." But he spoke more vehemently, "If I have to die with you, I will not deny you." And they all said likewise. I think sometimes we forget that they all said the same thing. But Peter is the one that was so bold about it and brought it up in the first place. And so on the night of Jesus' arrest, in a matter of a few hours, Jesus was denied by Peter three times. And on the third denial, Jesus turned and looked straight at Peter. And you can imagine how that felt. Sometimes maybe we've had that look as a child where we know that we've done something wrong and all our parent has to do is turn and look at us. You know, when I was growing up, I had more than my share of spankings, I think. But when, you know, my sister was growing up, my parents hardly ever had to spank her because my dad said all we had to do is look at her and she'd burst into tears. Because she knew whatever it was, you know, and it touched her. And so Peter went out and wept bitterly. But what do we see in the life of Peter in Christ? That Jesus doesn't turn his back on Peter here. We'll say more about that in a minute. Peter just needs to try again. In John chapter 21, you read about the disciples. They're all going out to fish all night and catch nothing. Early in the morning, Jesus is on the shore. And this time the disciples didn't recognize him. And he calls the disciples out to cast their nets on the right side of the boat. You think about that. What about the left side? I mean, what difference does it make, you know, where you cast the net out? But the disciples may have thought, I mean, we're not going to catch fish any better on one side of the boat than the other. But when they did that, they were unable to haul the net because of the large number of fish. And that, in John chapter 21, then they realized who it was they were dealing with. It was the Lord. In Galatians chapter 2, well after the death and resurrection of Jesus, Peter is caught in hypocrisy concerning the Gentiles. Peter would not associate with the Gentiles for fear of those of the circumcision or the Jews. And Paul had to rebuke Peter for his actions. And it's kind of biting here. Galatians chapter 2, verse 11. When Peter had come to Antioch, I withstood him to his face because he was to be blamed. For before certain men came from James, he would eat with the Gentiles. But when they came, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing those who were of the circumcision. And the rest of the Jews played the hypocrite with him, so that even Barnabas was carried away with their hypocrisy. But when I saw that they were not straightforward about the truth of the gospel, I said to Peter before them all, if you being a Jew live in the manner of the Gentiles and not as the Jews, why do you compel Gentiles to live as Jews? We who are Jews by nature are not sinners of the Gentiles, knowing that a man is not justified by the works of the law, but by faith in Jesus Christ. Even we have believed in Jesus Christ that we might be justified by faith in Christ and not by the works of the law. For by the works of the law no flesh shall be justified. Do you think Paul was telling Peter anything that he didn't already know? Oh, yeah, that's right. I hadn't thought about that before. No, it's all about fitting in with others and being afraid of what other people think. And that's the indication that we have here, that I'm going to be like whoever I'm around. I'm going to behave like a Jew around the Jews and Gentile around the Gentiles. And Paul called him out on that and rebuked him. Yet Peter was not brought before the board of the apostles and told that he had to throw in the towel. This is it. You're out. Peter didn't have to stop being an apostle. He didn't stop being a follower of Christ. What did Peter have to do? He needed to stop doing this. And he needed to keep going. He needed to try again. How many chances would most people have given Peter? We see here, you know, we're kind of picking on Peter here. But, you know, Jesus, when he came in contact with him in the first place, he didn't really believe Jesus about putting the nets back down in the water. You know, we haven't caught anything. Jesus could have said, well, you know, if you're going to be so negative, I don't want anything to do with you. But Peter went ahead and did that. Would you have given Peter another chance there? Would you have given Peter another chance after lacking the faith to walk to Jesus on the water and becoming so afraid? When Jesus was right there with him, or when he makes such a bold statement that I'll never deny you, and then he does exactly what he said he wouldn't do. You know, Peter, there's just no excuse for that. You're doing exactly what you said you wouldn't do. You're so bold about it, and you lied, and you didn't live up to what you said you would do. So that's the last straw. I think what we see here is that Jesus has given Peter as many chances as he needs, as long as he'll give his whole heart to following him. Peter always served fully with his heart, even though he made some mistakes. So what is the lesson for us? Well, the lesson is it's never too late to try again. Yet to those who have already been immersed into baptism for the forgiveness of their sins, let's talk about you for a minute. The joy that you have when you come up out of the waters of baptism is a great thing. And probably it would be fair to say at no other time in your life do you feel as clean as you do right then. You've been forgiven. And then I can remember very vividly the first major failure that I had after I was baptized, and it tore me up. I felt like Peter, that I've done exactly what I said that I wouldn't do. You can become discouraged by your failures in your walk with God. You can come up short of what you know that you ought to be doing. And sometimes people can go down the path of what we've been talking about with the Pharisees, and they become hypocritical in their lives, showing up for services but not really devoting their lives to trusting God and loving Christ, and not really putting the effort into the life of Christ that we should. We may not be praying the way that we should, as Rex talked about recently. We We may have let earthly responsibilities with our jobs and other things, or friends or whatever, interfere with our service to the Lord. So what happens when somebody starts out so well and then they fade away? You just give up. You stop. You just, you know, cut God off totally. And that's not what we see happening with Peter. We see when Peter had failures, he gets up and he tries again. We might be failing in conquering sins and have weaknesses and temptations that continually cause us to stumble. And we might be in the situation where we're not being salt and light to the world. And when people look at us, they don't see Christ in our lives. We're not willing to stand up for God. We're not willing to defend His truth. What do we do? Well, you don't become discouraged. You don't go further away from God. You try again. Instead of giving up and throwing in the towel, you keep trying harder. And that's what we see in the life of Peter and many others. Peter was allowed to continue to come back to the Lord. If you haven't been the person that God wants you to be in your relationships, you haven't been a trustworthy person, you haven't been the kind of spouse that you ought to be, you've been selfish, you haven't been the kind of parent that you ought to be to your children, what do? You don't give up. It's not too late to try again, as long as we are blessed with the time that God has given us. And to those who have never decided to follow Jesus, who have not been immersed for forgiveness of sins. Sometimes people look at their life and they are discouraged. They feel like, you know, that they are just too dirty, that they cannot be a follower of Christ, that they've done things that are too bad. Of course, we think about Paul Paul considered himself to be the chief of sinners, and nobody else would have looked at Paul in a list of applications to be a disciple of Christ and pulled his to be number one. It's not what people would have chosen, but God chose him. Jesus wants us to try. He does not want us to be discouraged. He wants to save us. He doesn't want us to perish. We have to quit trying to fix things ourselves. Without Christ, that's what puts an end to futility and frustration and emptiness. You know, there are times that people think about, you know, hiring a maid or having somebody, you know, come in and clean their house. Well, what's the first thing that a lot of people want to do if they look for that service? Well, I've got to clean the house first before they come, because I don't want them to see how dirty it is. Well, if you can clean it, then you don't need the maid. But when we talk about our lives spiritually, isn't that the way that sometimes unbelievers and those who have not yet dedicated their life to Christ, you know, well, as soon as I can get out of this relationship that's wrong, or as soon as I can clean this up or that up, you know, as soon as I can fix everything that's wrong with what I'm doing in my life, then I'll come to Christ. You don't get cleaned up first. You can't clean yourself up. The only way that we can be cleansed of our sins is to come in contact with the blood of Christ. Quit trying to do things yourself, and it puts an end to that futility and that frustration. The writer of Ecclesiastes, after trying all the things that are available in the world, said, "Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. Life without God is vanity, and it's like chasing the wind. But following God, it fills those voids. It makes us complete." I know that I've mentioned this before in the past. Some of you may not have heard it before, but one of my favorite passages in the Bible is found in Mark chapter 16. And, you know, the four different gospel accounts that record some of the things that happened after, you know, Jesus was buried and resurrected, and people come to the tomb to find that Jesus is not there anymore. Mark records it a little bit differently and adds something that the others don't. Mark chapter 16, verse 5 says, "Entering the tomb, they saw a young man clothed in a long white robe, sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. But he said to them, 'Do not be alarmed. You seek Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He is risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him, but go tell his disciples and Peter that he is going before you into Galilee. There you will see him as he said to you.'" What's recorded here that's not recorded elsewhere is this statement, "Go tell his disciples and Peter." You don't need to say Peter there, do you? I mean, Peter's a disciple. I mean, it would have been understood that "go tell his disciples" included Peter. I don't know that Peter felt real included right now, because he probably excluded himself. If he'd be listening to voices that he shouldn't, the voices he would be hearing was that "you have done exactly what you said that you wouldn't. You have failed Christ. You don't deserve to be with him. You are of no help to him. You just need to go away." This was God reaching down from heaven and telling Peter that "I haven't given up on you." That was the message to Peter. And we know what Peter did after that. Peter went and did a lot of great things in preaching the gospel of Christ. He preached the first gospel sermon on the day of Pentecost. He was a great help to many others. He continued to make some mistakes, but he didn't give up, because God explicitly told him that regardless of the failures that you've had, that "I have not given up on you, Peter. Go tell his disciples and Peter." So if you ever feel that level of discouragement, just remember that if God would take Peter back, he'll take you back. Don't become discouraged in that way. Though this is the type of person that Jesus reached out to, he wanted Peter not to be discouraged. He continued to encourage him time after time when he made mistakes, because he wanted Peter there as part of his fold, because he had great plans for him. Hope this will be an encouragement to you not to be discouraged. If we can help you in any way to be obedient to the gospel of Christ, we invite you to come while we stand and sing. Thank you.